K-Mud Podcast presents.
I'm Florina Nickley. I'm your host this morning for Mindful Mud. And Mindful Mud is always on the second Sunday of the month for Spiritual Perspective here on KMUD. And today I have a serious roundtable here with me. Lots of four folks in the studio with me and somebody on Zoom. They will introduce themselves in just a second. And they are all participants of the mindfulness course that I've been teaching and I'm still teaching. We're just coming into our last week coming up here. It's a 6-week course. And so we will talk about mindfulness. Guess what? All right. And again, welcome to Mindful Mud. And let's just dive right in. Who wants to start? Just share your name and perhaps what could you share? Like what made you curious about mindfulness? Just a short intro. If you like, you can also just share your name. Want to start? Yeah, let's go around.
First. Hi, I'm Tara Huff. I was curious about mindfulness or getting back into mindfulness. And so I had been practicing years ago, but I hadn't been practicing since 2016. So I saw your ad on your call on, I think it was Hague Arborville, and I was like, let's check that out.
So. And here you are.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thank you, Tara.
Hi, I'm Miranda Parson, and I decided to do the mindfulness, one with the prodding of my friend Deborah, who's here today, but also because I've had several stressful jobs, and I had this epiphany one day that what's the common thread? It's me. So I'm stressed out no matter what job I'm doing. So maybe I need to work on myself. And so that's what brought me to mindfulness. And I, the live class, I brought my youngest son with me, and it's been great for him as well.
Thank you.
I'm Deborah Orlando. And actually, my journey was through Qigong. I had been exposed to Qigong many, many years ago and was very drawn to it, but never really made the commitment. And then through Florina, the teacher, I started doing Qigong, and one thing led to another.
Hi, I'm Larry Frizzell. A good friend of mine was taking the class and invited me to join, so it's been a good experience.
Excellent. And we got somebody on Zoom. Hi, Tasha.
Hi, can you hear me?
Perfect.
Good morning. Yes, this is Tasha McKee. And, well, Florina, you just are so exciting when you start talking about mindfulness. And I was drawn to it because of who you are as a teacher but and a person, but also just finding that it's more and more important in my life to speak courageously with people about things I might not agree about with, and wanting to do it in a kind way, and wanting to not be traumatized, wanting to be able to breathe when there's a conflict and just be there for it. And it sounded like mindfulness could help with that. So I'm hoping to cultivate that in my life big time.
Wow, you all, thank you so much. Yeah. You're kind of put me speechless here. That's really wonderful. What an inspiration to hear from all of you. Like just the different areas we're coming from into these kind of practices. It's always so fascinating to me to hear that because we all have our own stories, right? We all have our own like drawn and why we are curious. Yeah, and that's really where it's at, and that's what makes it so cool. Yeah. Excellent. Wonderful. So did anything, we all have like normally like ideas about what something is, right? Did you find that your imagination, what mindfulness is and what mindfulness is, what you found out during the course, has that kind of clashed? Has that kind of evolved, changed? anybody.
I know for me, I went into it thinking it was all going to be about relaxation, like I've experienced with other meditation. And that was one of the first things you said, that this is not a relaxation technique. That might be a side effect, a really positive one, but it wasn't the purpose. So that was news to me when I walked in the door.
I know. This is why I say it, right? And then there's always this big quiet of like, oh, I might be in the wrong course. Thanks, Miranda. Yeah.
When I first embarked on it, I was pretty I was a novice, and so I did have a sense of it was woo woo, you know, it's trippy. And over the years, I found that all the things that I used to think were woo woo actually have a strong scientific base to it. So I thought that was cool.
Woo against science, right?
Yeah,
or together.
That, you know, it turns out woo woo and science are joining each other these days.
Closer and closer. Yep.
It's about time.
The more we evolve, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's about time. Thanks, Tara.
I thought mindfulness would be working with, it'd be going towards other people, like that, and it's more of what's going on in our own lives and how we think about things. So that's how it's different.
Interesting. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, again, through Qigong, Florina can't help herself, but everything she does is with mindfulness. So for me, also the word itself kind of tells you what it's about. And yeah, so curiosity.
Curiosity, for sure. Mm. Tasha, did you want to chime in, or?
I think I'm good.
Good. Excellent.
That was all. I echo what everybody else has said so far. Yeah.
Yeah, we have perception. And, you know, I'm still changing my perception about what mindfulness is by just keeping exploring it and keep being mindful about it and curious about it. It keeps being more and more, or sometimes less and less, depending on which angle it is, of what I've thought it is, right? And I think that really is what keeps it alive, too. It's not a stagnation. It grows with who we are. Yeah. And I that's perhaps why I'm still so excited after over 30 years of practice. I'm just, like, blown away by the techniques of growing more awareness in my life. Yeah. Every day. It's just incredible. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. Wonderful. Thank you so much for being here, you all. This is really a sweet treat to hear from so many of you. So if, like, you know, mindfulness, we haven't even given a definition yet. If a close friend would ask you, what is actually mindfulness? How would you describe that?
It's being in the moment, taking a breath before you react to something so that you're coming at it with a more calm mind. It's emptying your mind of all the busy craziness that's going on. I'm a multitasker, and so there's always like a gazillion things going on in my brain at once. I got to do this. I got to do that. And mindfulness gives me a chance to let go of all that and get a little centered and try to clear out the clutter in the brain.
Yes. Uh-huh. Thank you.
I think developing awareness of awareness. Oh, and in that awareness of awareness, being able to optimize my choices for myself.
Optimizing choices. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So big. Noticing that we have them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So kind of a standard definition of mindfulness is really paying attention to what is now, right? And that sounds so simple, and it's not. I mean, it's simple, but it's not easy, right? So, and we're doing that in a certain way, like with curiosity. I feel like it's very important how we pay attention, not just that we pay attention, but really with curiosity and as good as we can muster, non-judgmental. I mean, the non-judgmental is kind of impossible because we have a brain that makes, that constantly judges. That's just part of what it does. However, we can more and more step back from that and I'm going to make a word up. I know it. Here it comes. Not identify. Okay, here we go. I say not identify with it, right? yeah, and we are keeping it light here, right? Mindfulness can be a lot of fun. And it can be also very deep and very serious at the same time. But yeah, so not identifying necessarily with the thoughts, right, and with the judgments we're having, and just being curious, right? And then we suddenly see these choices we have. It's incredible. The more we know about the mind, the more we know, wait, I can direct where my attention goes. That is powerful right there. I can choose sometimes if I'm going to go down that rabbit hole of worry or anxiety, or if I'm coming back to what is right now. And if you're listening right now, are you in the present moment? Are you aware that you're sitting or standing, or perhaps you're making yourself a Sunday morning breakfast or whatever you're doing, or driving? Are you aware of the activity that you're doing? Are we here in the studio aware that we're sitting on chairs, being with each other? There's always a deeper awareness that we can cultivate, and that is what it's about. So it's not about changing the reality, right? Or changing other people, right? And just like the perception is what we can control or be in charge of. Yeah. Thanks. Anybody else? Kind of like definition, or what is it for you?
Well, this is Tasha here. I really liked the STOP practice that you had us in the early class. Do I have it right? The
stop. Yes.
The stop. Yeah. And that's something that really helps make all that happen, where you encourage us, like something where we do every day, like when we're going to go get in the car, to when we get to the door handle, stop for a moment, take a breath, observe, and then proceed. And I think that's one practice that is one of the easier ones to do, like on a regular basis, and it just changes everything. You get to see the whole world around you. You're not just getting in the car and your to-do list and lost.
What a great, yeah. So for the listener, it's called the STOP practice, STOP, and it stands for whenever you realize you have a moment of clarity, you stop. Literally, stop what you're doing. And then T is take a breath. Literally, just take one breath. O is observe. What am I doing? What am I thinking? How's my body? Right? What's emotionally there for me right now? With who am I with? All of it. What am I seeing? What am I hearing? That's observing, right? And then P is proceed. And you can make this in a super short practice, as Tasha said, right? Getting into the car. Every time you open that car door, stop. Can be literally 10-second practice, right? Yeah. It can be so powerful just to do that. Or every time you open a door, period. That would be a big challenge, right? We open a lot of doors. Or every time, even just when you brush your teeth, or you name it, open the fridge, or, you know, yeah. Thank you, Tasha. Hey, any other favorite practices? Something that you took with you and you're going with it and it's kind of helpful?
Just becoming more aware of how things impact me. Like my guilty pleasure is scrolling sometimes, you know, going on social media and going and watching those reels. Just, you know, being aware of that, it actually isn't a pleasant sensation that I'm getting from it. It actually is kind of itchy and agitating. And now that I'm aware of that, I'm able to make more of an informed choice on whether I want to engage with that.
So powerful.
Yeah.
I think we all know, I mean, because those things are so addictive, right? That quick dopamine rush that we get from each click, from each, I mean, it's biochemically there, right? Those things are designed to make us addictive. And somebody said once, it's like they sprinkle heroin over, make these things super addictive. There's whole industries that are just linked with that, right? So yeah, how do we take our power back? That's basically where it's at, right? Not that if we want to scroll, right? Give ourselves a time limit, however you want to deal with it. But it's the awareness that makes it change.
And I would add that it's an act of rebellion. I feel sometimes angry that my entire life, somebody's been trying to pull my attention away from me. And so in doing this practice, I'm taking it back. It's mine.
Hmm. I always say meditation, mindfulness is a real act of rebellion. It's one of the most like powerful protests we can do, because we are starting to wake up. We have power of what we're doing. We have power of what we're buying. We have power of who we believe and what we believe. And we can start bringing our own beauty into this world. And we can if we're asleep. I always have to laugh. Of course, I'm not American, right? So I can say this. I always have to laugh. It's like, what's up with the American dream? Why can we not just wake up? You know, it's like, I never really understood that whole, like, draw to the American dream. I'm like, I don't want to dream. I want to be awake. But that's just me. Yeah, thanks, Tara.
I have a favorite practice, and it's the mindful seeing. And I told it to my granddaughter, Mira, who's 6 years old, the other evening, and about how it can help reduce anxiety. When you look, I was just describing how if you're looking, just really gazing and like maybe looking and see how many colors of red you can see, that calms you down when you get upset. And she said, oh, I'm going to try it tonight when I go to sleep. And that was really sweet. But I tried it with some regulatory guys that I was very upset with for their regulatory tunnel vision and just wanting to make everybody have more permits. And this was just a few days ago. And I was ready to, you know, really get fisticuff with them, but I realized that wasn't going to help. And so I kept looking at the colors of the leaves on the oak trees, and then I would settle down and breathe. And then I just started a dialogue about what we're doing out here with stewardship and how we're taking care of the land and how we need their help with these things, rather than being having all these permits and fees to the point that we can't afford it or function. And I felt like it was really much more effective because I was taking the sting out of it, as you say. Can you describe that, Florina, about how you take the sting out?
I think you just described it, Tosha, right?
Yeah.
That when we come from a place of anger or righteousness even, right? We all know how it should be, right?
Yeah.
If we come from there, I mean, what happens? If we have somebody who comes from that place, what are we doing? We put our resistance up, right? Because, no, I know how it is. So now you have two people knowing how it should be that are clashing. The dialogue is lost, right? You try to prove each other wrong. That's not a dialogue. That's not going to go anywhere. So if you're like, hey, this is how it is for me. This is how I see it. This is what I like to see happening. Suddenly there is this shared, you know, humanity back of like, oh, this is how you see it. Let me tell you how I see it. And then suddenly, sometimes we all want the same thing. Not always, but sometimes. And we can just each honor each other's goals and see, okay, where can we find a compromise, right? Or where we can even find a win-win. It's not always compromise. Sometimes it's even a third solution that comes out of it. If we really listen, honor each other, and not just want to be right and push something through our own agenda. I mean, we all are there sometimes, right? Either with family or in the business or whatever you do. Man, and that's a discipline. And you describe it so well, right? Mindful seeing can be so powerful because you give your system the idea that you're safe. That person is not coming to kill you, right? But it sometimes feels like that, right? You have to fight for your dear life. So you see the oak trees. You see nothing is attacking you. You're actually safe. Suddenly, you have that prefrontal cortex engaged, right? You have your whole brain talking with each other. And now you suddenly have the language. You have the words. You have the compassion. Because if that prefrontal cortex is not on board, you don't have the compassion. You just have your amygdala firing and here we go, right? Yeah. Thanks so much, Tosha. That's a very powerful share.
Mm. Thank you for teaching us that one.
It's an easy practice. It's an easy practice. Yeah. I share it because it helps me to communicate with people when I feel attacked. Yeah, same thing. Mm.
You brought up the word resistance, and one of my favorite things from your class was your example of pain and resistance. I'm sort of a numbers person, so I could really visualize it when you put it on the board. But basically what she taught us is your level of pain, say it's a 10, and you can't change that. You're going to have that pain no matter what. But it either gets magnified by your resistance. So if your resistance is a 10, now your pain, you multiply those, now your pain is a 100.
The suffering, right?
The suffering, yeah. And then the suffering, yeah, thank you. And then, but if your reaction is different, if your reaction, your resistance is only a 1, then your level of suffering doesn't go up. It's still a 10. But if somehow you can have a 0 resistance, 0 times 10 is 0. So you have not increased your suffering at all, which is...
And the pain is still a 10.
And the pain is still a 10, but your suffering doesn't get any worse. You're not just magnifying it.
Right. Yeah. So that has helped you.
Absolutely. It's a... just reminds you of how you react to something really makes a difference.
Yeah, your perception. Yeah, because what we really suffer about is the way we relate to things, not the things itself. Yeah. It's a practice.
It's definitely a practice.
It's not something
a challenge.
That, yeah, it's a challenge. But for me, it's always so like it makes me feel powerful that I have actually things that I can work with these challenges and not just be at its mercy.
Well, and just because you blew up and blew it today doesn't mean you won't get it right later or tomorrow.
Thank you for bringing that up. The non-perfection. We have to be kind to ourselves about that because, man, these practices, they're high goals, right? They can be super powerful. And we mess it up all the time. I blow it. On by the day, like, oh yeah, for sure. And just come back to it. Yeah.
It's almost as if perfection and compassion are opposites.
Nice. Uh-huh. Do you want to say more?
Well, you know, one says, I'm not enough. And then one says, it's okay, you are enough.
Let's take a breath of being enough right now. That's a big one. Yeah. And the interesting thing about that is, right, sometimes we have this idea that if we feel that we're enough, we won't change. And it's actually the opposite. Science shows us the opposite. If we're constantly down on ourselves, we won't change. That's such an important part. If we're kind to ourselves, we want to change. We have the energy to change, right? Towards something that we want to become more and more. And it starts with self-acceptance. Any change. And man, that is one of the hardest challenges, right? And we're not really taught that by teachers or society. We're always taught, do better. Heck no. What if we don't do better? Yeah. Excellent. Any other favorite practices or things that you feel like have already kind of shifted some of your daily lives?
One thing you got me thinking about was another analogy you gave of when someone falls in the river, our natural instinct is to jump in after them instead of going, wait, why did they fall in the river? So instead of continually jumping in the river to save someone or save ourselves, why aren't we going to the spot where we're falling in the river and working on fixing that?
Yeah, that analogy, right? Of we're just dealing with the right now. Oh, I'm angry, so let's just, I don't know, take a pill or take a nap, or, and sometimes that's okay, right? However, it's like, okay, wait a minute. Why? We're like getting curious about that anger or the blow up or whatever the thing is, or the pattern of anxiety or the pattern of loneliness. Where's this even coming from? Like getting curious. That's that curiosity aspect, right? Of not running away from it and not just putting a Band-Aid on it, but really starting to be curious about our patterns, our behaviors. And again, there comes the self-compassion that's so important to actually deal with it. Yeah. And when we are starting to practice some mindfulness and put that in our life, that's what we do. We go upstream, right? We're going to start looking at the causes of all of it. Yeah. So I want to remind everybody, you are listening to Mindful Mud, the monthly radio show here on Spiritual Perspective on KMUD. And I'm here with five wonderful guests from my course that I've been teaching that we're almost done with. It's a course that I've been teaching a few times in different settings from all kinds of different settings. I don't even remember right now. However, it's always wonderful to see in a group, also the group dynamic that's happening, right? And just being part of that process. So one of those big questions, right? Sometimes we fall off the wagon when we practice. What are some tricks perhaps that you have already experienced that when you do forget to be mindful, perhaps you dropped it for a day or perhaps even longer, what brings you back to it without self-blame? Or perhaps there is a self-blame in there first.
Well, one of the things you were talking about with non-judgment, just like we bring ourselves back to the breath, bringing ourselves back to the practice with non-judgment. Oh, there's wandering self, you know, maybe labeling it like you said with the mind. There's thinking mind, there's storytelling mind. Well, we can even label ourselves, you know, and that's because I've you know, wandered from the practice and then for long periods of time. Another thing that really helps me is just going to a class like this, you know, and being alongside other people really kind of keeps me on track too.
It's the same thing with like exercise or all of these things, right? Most of us are better when we have the commitment of a group. It keeps us somehow on track. Mm-hmm. And it's harder to give that ourselves without it. Thanks, Tara. Yeah.
I think once you step on a path, also it's hard to, you become mindful of when you fall off. It's like you don't have a choice, so you have to forgive yourself and maybe analyze what you did a little bit and then just forgive yourself and do better next time.
What would be the inspiration to come back to it?
The level of success that I've experienced prior, you know.
And what is success for you?
Wow. You know, over the years, I was diagnosed with ADHD when I was a kid. You know, I was on Dexedrine when the DSM-3 was hot off the press, you know, and yeah. And I'd lose things. I would just put my purse down and walk away, or I'd lose my keys or lock my keys in the car. You know, that doesn't happen so much anymore. And maybe sometimes I notice that might be increasing, and I'm like, okay, I know it works for that. And so returning to the practice is pretty dire for that.
Very concrete examples, right?
Yeah.
I'm just sick of losing my keys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm glad you're bringing up ADHD too, right? Because I hear a lot, it's like, oh, I'm ADHD or this or that, and I can't practice meditation or mindfulness. Not true. We all start where we're at. And actually, if we have a little bit of, you know, trouble with focusing, you can train that muscle. It's harder. You start something somewhere else. And that's the beauty of it. We all start somewhere. This is not, we all start at the same spot. It's like you start with what you got. And if you apply it, you will feel a difference. Yeah. Thanks, Sarah. Mm. Yeah.
And I would also add that what you piggyback off what you're saying, that, yeah, increasing your tolerance and then, yeah, figuring out where you are willing to engage, even at the smallest increment. Like, you know, hey, I just noticed after, you know, a half hour of my brain going all over the place that I noticed that, you know.
Yes, that trick of like small moments of awareness over periods of time are changing your brain chemistry and your brain wiring. It's really true. It's like with exercise. It is the same thing. Wiring your brain. It's like if you don't do push-ups, you won't ever be able to do really, you know, 10 or 20 push-ups in a row or pull-ups or whatever it is that you want to go to. Same thing with the brain. If you never try to bring that mind back to the present, you will never be able to do it. And another thing that I loved so much that I tell myself, whatever you practice, you get better at. If you practice scrolling, right? If you practice anger, if you practice not listening, you will get better at it. If you practice, right? Stopping, breathing, tuning in, even if you remember once a day, you will get better at that. So it's a powerful thing. I think we do have a caller. Caller, welcome to Mindful Mud.
Is that me?
That is you.
Oh, hi. Well, you were asking a couple of questions. Well, the very last one I heard was, why would we return to a practice that we have dropped for some reason? I mean, even if it's working, we don't want to do it. Well, my reason would be, because I feel crappy if I'm not doing the practices that keep me balanced and on a good path. And you asked, you know, what to share, what practices we might do on a daily basis. And for me, for many years, I've been chanting Nam-myoho Renge Kyo. It's Nichiren Buddhism, and it came from Japan around World War II. Along with a lot of war brides that just brought it to the various cities that they moved to, and it grew, and there's a lot of people doing it. It's an anti-war movement. We don't believe in any violence or war, but we do believe in strength, that chanting Nam-myoho Renge Kyo gets you in tune with the universe. They use that terminology and brings out the best of you. So you do it in order to feel happier and more confident. But also, they talk about polishing your life and wanting to do your human revolution. So, you know, it's like to take on this practice and want to do it all the time is to want to strive to improve our destiny and our karma. You know, a lot of times we think that karma is immutable. It's just destiny we can't escape, and that's not really true. We can make causes to change karma that we don't like. I mean, not always. You have a hand missing. You're not going to grow a new one. But anyway, it's brought me a lot of joy and a lot more calmness and happiness than I think I would have if I didn't do it. And I do it on my own because there's not that many people doing it here. But about once a month or so, I go up to Fortuna or Eureka and meet with a bunch of other people that are really into it. And I also tune into Zoom meetings that they have that is very helpful. And, yeah, that's about it. That's, I meditate, too. I do the quiet meditation once in a while. I learned transcendental meditation when I was, like, 21 and from the Maharishi people. And it was very helpful. It was a very deep, calming kind of meditation, and it really stimulated your thinking. It wasn't about emptying your mind. It was about relaxing and letting the thoughts flow.
Right.
And look at them and send them away, bring them back. But for me, it's a really good time to think, which sounds very opposite of what people usually consider meditation to be. But chanting Nam-myoho Renge Kyo, you do out loud. You do it with a mandala that you can focus on that really helps you, you know, concentrate on all the things, and you chant for what you want, and you chant to help other people too. They say you chant for yourself, and right. you chant for other people, and you don't want to leave either one of those out.
Right. So you found practices that work for you, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's excellent. And that's what it's about, right? To really find different practices and perhaps even groups that are working for us. There is not one practice. And this is – thank you, caller, for sharing.
Sure. And yeah, this there's is, a lot of practices that will get you in a better place. You
that's
know,
right.
Sometimes smoking and enjoying is a good thing. It's legal
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
And it helps you relax and focus. But
yes.
that's just, you know, some like it and some don't. Just one more.
Yeah. Thank you, caller. It's – you know, it's really important that we – there's not one practice, right, that can work. To find something that's working for us. This is why in this course I offer you a whole, how do you say that? A whole
hooray.
Buffet, a whole hooray of different practices. And I encourage you, right, to pick two, three, whatever works for you, like a formal practice, an informal practice. And then play around with it. The question is, are we doing it, right? That's really more important. And what are we resonating with? And having these tools to play around with. And it sounds like you already are really doing it and applying it. That's incredible to hear. Yeah. And I really like what the caller also said, that human evolution part. Sometimes it feels like, oh, it's a total ego trip, right, to meditate. Or it's like, oh, the self-improvement kind of thing, right? I see it really as a human evolution. If we as a human species are not waking up, we're in very big trouble. And so this is, again, this is why I call this rebellion. This is why I call it protest. This is why I call it, you know, real change. It starts from the inside. That's my experience. Yeah, if we don't have self-compassion with ourselves, how can we have compassion to others? It's very hard. How can we see, how can we even hold it all, right? There's so much going on. We have to first fill our own cup. Put the oxygen mask on our own face first, right? Yeah. And that is not a selfish act at all. It really, really isn't. I want to say that big out loud. Yeah. Wow. All right. So another thing that came up in this call too, the group versus solo, right? Tara, you said like a group really helps. So I want to kind of hear like, is a group helping? Is it intimidating? What's your experience? Is it both?
Having a group is helpful because it puts a form of accountability of like, we have to show up not just for ourselves, but for the group and participating. Like if you're a shy personality and you just don't want to say anything, but you're very good at pulling people in, getting people to speak up, encouraging those of us that talk too much to give the other people, the quiet people, a chance to speak up. Being in the group setting was amazing because everybody has a different perspective and a different experience in life. And all that comes to light in the class when someone speaks up and says, this has been my experience, or this is what helped me. And so maybe it's a new thing, or it reminds you of something, a teaching, and then you go on about how you expand on that idea. And that's been really helpful. But ultimately, we are responsible for ourselves and keeping the practice going. So at home when we're
it's both.
Experiencing life.
It's
yeah,
both.
We need
yeah.
both.
Thank you, Miranda. Yeah.
I don't know why it is, but I feel like the quality of my sit is better when I'm alongside a group of people who are also doing the same.
Yeah, and you have been to the Wednesday mm-hmm. group, right? And Larry, you have too. Don't want to put you guys on spot, but it's like it's a phenomenon that is happening when you do sit also silently and when you process in a group too. It's easier to drop in because it's that holding of a whole group, right? It's really almost like, or it's not almost, it is like we're creating a field together and we can lean into each other's presence. And perhaps one of the person or two of the persons are holding it down with being present. You can drop back in quicker. I used to sit in sendos with 120 people who have all been experienced practitioners for weeks at a time. You literally walk in, you drop in, and that's it. I mean, you still have your stuff going on, right? However, it is such a different presence when you do sit in a group. And nowadays, right, when we talk about woo-woo and science, there's more and more science that is actually also showing that, right? When 500 people throw compassion or send out compassion at a city, there's less crime. Like, this stuff is powerful. So when we come together and sit and be quiet, we're not even saying anything very incredible, beautiful. We're just sitting there with our own thoughts. That's powerful for changing the world. Yeah, thanks, Sarah. Thanks, Miranda. Other things, sitting at home, sitting in a group?
Well, one thing, by being in a group, I have to stop my day. I have to prepare for it. And then that makes me more aware of what I'm doing. Whether if I'm sitting at home, I'm not going to get into it as deep, I think. And then listening to the group will have something going on, and my mind will be going off in this direction. This is what I'm working on. I hear somebody else with a whole different concept of what we're learning. So then I can bring that into also. So a lot of new thoughts from other people that I can work with.
Yeah, and I learn so much from each group every time. It's really beautiful. We're social beings, right? And social media is not going to give us that kick. It just doesn't, you know? We have to come more together. And even if it's just in silence or if we share a meal or whatever it is, it's so important. I feel sometimes almost like it's, you know, it's kind of one of those ideas of making us less and less powerful by disconnecting us from each other. And I think we have to kind of give that other idea of like, no, we come together. We come together, no matter what it is, dancing, practicing Qigong, meditating, sharing a meal, you name it, right? Have a party, go to the farmer's market. All of these acts are really important that we still keep it up. Yeah, yeah. Excellent. So we have already heard some of the benefits. Is there anything else that you'd like to kind of say? What has already kind of changed? Or is there even a friend or a family member that perhaps said, hey, something is different?
I had my most challenging family member say that I seemed younger since I started. And I think part of that is I enlightened up around them. Like I took some of the heaviness away when, you know, just... Okay.
Wow. Yeah. And we talked about, right, that actually meditation is proven to be anti-aging. Yeah, it is very much true. Thanks, Miranda.
Put
yeah.
that on social media.
Put that on social media. Anti-aging course. Learn how to meditate. Oh, my God. Yeah, I have ways to learn when it comes to advertisement, I tell you. Well, we can keep it light. Yeah, for sure.
Well, yeah. I liked what you said about rebellion. I never thought of it that way. And I consider myself a spiritual outlaw. Mm-hmm. I was born into Catholicism, which even as a young child, I thought was ridiculous. And then I just have learned to take, because of my experience with Catholicism, I don't like dogma very much. I don't like being told what I'm supposed to do, thus the spiritual outlaw part. So I'm free to take from anywhere, a little bit of Buddhism, a little bit of, hey, born again, why not, you know? But what I find with mindfulness is that it resonates. What I have learned because of that ability to not attach to one idea or one religious belief is that I can feel the resonance when someone speaks of, and mindfulness is just resonates with all the things that I really believe in: compassion, generosity, kindness. Change it to loving kindness, compassion, self-compassion, forgiveness, self-forgiveness. It's like, it's just, it resonates with me like nothing else I've ever really experienced. So,
yes. A spiritual outlaw, love it. Yeah. You know, a lot of it is when it comes to mindfulness or meditation, how I teach it, it's stop actually the believing, or not stop it, but really go beyond it, right, in the way of experiencing. Belief eventually might crumble, right? Eventually might be, is that actually true, right? And then the experience is really what changes you. At least that's my experience. When I just believe something, that's great. I have a railing. I have something to hold myself on, right? And that's sometimes so, so important. Depends where we're at, right? It's really important to hold us up. And the more I go forward, the more I just want to know. And knowing comes from experience. And really experience, how does it actually feel to be here? To be alive right now? How does that feel? Not knowing that I should be in the moment, that I should be present, that that's the goal. It's not about that. It's even with the breath. Not thinking about breathing, but breathing, right? Experiencing our breath, experiencing our body. And then what happens is this incredible thing that you really rewire your nervous system. And that doesn't come from believing. That's, again, can be helpful, right? Can be a huge support sometimes. And the real rewiring of our nervous system comes from experiencing and doing the practice. Yeah. Has some of this neuroscience that I shared with you guys, the little nuances here and there, has that been helpful at all? Like to deal with stress or something?
I think it enhances my overall belief that change is possible and that it exists. You know, whether you believe you can or you can't, you're right. So it's you know, it's a very foundational starting point for, you know, whether you're walking around with your spiritual shopping cart and picking stuff off the shelves, or if you're doing a psychotherapy or anything, you really starting with the awareness and the belief that change is real and is exists, that the brain can change itself with its own awareness of itself, it's foundational.
The brain can change itself with its own awareness of itself. I love that. Yeah, you nailed it. Trippy.
It is trippy.
It is trippy. Thank you.
And in a lot of ways, we've really yet to understand how deep the mind, what is there, the mind and the brain, they're very different. The brain is gray matter and the mind is like outer space, right? And we're just sort of beginning to really, that's why they're starting to come together. Because they're very different aspects of each other.
I'm so glad you bring that up. What is the mind, right? It's definitely not just the brain. It's definitely part of that. But, you know, how Dan Siegel puts it, and I hope I'm going to put this right, neuroscientist Dan Siegel, that I'm learning so much. It's definitely the wiring of our nervous system, and it's the whole body. Right, we forget that this whole body thing is really important. And a third component, interconnectedness. We forget that. What's going on when we're together with other people or other beings? I'm not excluding trees or animals here at all, or rocks, whatever it is. There's an energy exchange. That is mind too, right? The mind doesn't stop with your brain. So we have a big mind going on right here at the Kema Studio and on Zoom, right? That's all, that's the community mind, right? That's happening. So I think that's yeah. And hey, we still have no idea. Like, neuroscience is such a young science, and we're just scraping it. I mean, we're making leaps and bounds, right? At suddenly, finally, to realize some things. Oh, I wish we would apply a little more in schools and politics and you name it, and medicine. We're still lacking on that. We're still kind of going behind, but things go slow. But I have a really good outlook on if we put these practices and what we know now into the real stuff where it needs to show up, you know? Yeah. And I think we're all part of this already. Yeah.
And you can't unknow.
Nice. Yeah, you can learn. You can change. Yeah, it's happening.
So it is, because you can't unknow what's out there. So yeah, it's got to keep moving forward.
There you go.
However
there
slow
you go.
It goes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we're feeding the field, as Rupert Sheldrake would say. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
We're feeding the field. All right. So we're already coming close to the end. Perhaps a quick, like, do you have a commitment? Do you have, like, what's your personal idea of keeping it going? Any ideas there? Any shares? Perhaps inspirations even for the listeners? What are some small practices you're doing that are helpful? Or what are you committing to? I know there's a lot of different questions here. Just pick it up.
The informal practices are really helpful because they kind of can take them anywhere. They're pretty portable. Got my five senses and, you know, just noticing.
Mm-hmm. Just dropping in. Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'm committing to 20 minutes a day of a mindful meditation.
Can I ask, are you using an app? Are you doing silence? Are you breathing?
Right now, just silence. Sometimes I have to say a little mantra in my mm-hmm. mind to get myself to let go of the clutter and pull myself in. Sometimes I can just be silent. This morning, the 20 minutes was gone and like it felt like a minute. My alarm went off and I was like, wow, that's over already. So maybe that'll get to grow and go longer, but, that's what I'm committing to right now. And then, I didn't even know some of the things I were doing were parts of mindful meditation, like the mindful seeing. So I'll continue with that. And
sometimes we can discover, oh, wait, I've already been doing this. This is called mindfulness. Oh, how cool.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
And I'd like to continue with the loving kindness of mm-hmm. especially to myself.
Yes, thank you.
Not judging myself, being good to myself.
One of the most
putting
transformative.
Myself first, which is hard for a mom.
Yes.
Even though my kids are grown.
It's hard. It's hard. What? I'm putting myself first? What do you mean? Yeah. Any other like last words, inspirations, perhaps for the listeners, for yourself?
This is Tasha. I'm finding the mindful breathing really helpful for my health. And that's one thing I can check in on if I'm driving or sitting at the computer, is just checking to see if I'm breathing lower down in my belly or if I'm doing really shallow breathing, which has been more the typical. And what I'm really noticing is if there's not enough time, like, and that's usually the case, there's too many things and too little time, that I start doing this shallow breathing and it just builds stress and it makes me a little dizzy actually. So this is really, really helping a lot. And then the formal practice is a little harder, but I'm fitting it in more like 10 minutes, three times a week, just to have a foundation, because I do think that's really important to carry the rest of it.
Thank you, Tasha. Yeah, it is. The formal practices are carrying the informal practices, the ones we drop in during the day. If we have that time in the morning or in the evening or at lunch, wherever you fit it in, just put yourself, okay, I'm doing this, just like brushing your teeth or combing your hair. Mm. Any other last words before we wrap it up? Wonderful round. I'm so grateful you're all here. It's been a real pleasure.
Just thank you for having us on.
Thank you, Thero.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing your message with the community. I know you work in the schools. It's amazing to get the young kids doing this at an early age. So maybe by the time they're our age, they'll be so much further along than all of us.
Yeah. It's hopeful. You know, I think I really can help myself. Just as I think Deborah or somebody said, is like, yeah, I'm pretty enthusiastic when it comes to mindfulness, when it comes to Qigong, when it comes to these practices. That literally has saved my life, right? That's why I'm like, if I can do it, anybody can do it. That's really where it's at. And not just emotionally or mentally, I changed my life. I changed it physically too. So wherever your cruxes are, there are practices out there that can support you and help you live. All right, we have to wrap it up, you all. Thank you again, Kmod, for hosting us. Thank you, Sheila, for being our wonderful engineer. Thank you, community, for listening. If you're more curious to find out about classes I offer, you can go to florinanickley.com. You can also just literally Google the practice you're curious, meditation, Qigong, mindfulness at Garberville. My name will pop up. And Wednesday meditation group is always open for anybody. That's 5 to 6:30 at the Dharma Center or on Zoom. And my number, if you're curious, is 707-223-2005. Give me a call. Happy to support you. Much love to you all. Thank you again.
To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast and also on our website, kmud.org.